good afternoon, boys and girls. It's Saturday, and we're in the very last day of January. Boy, I'm ready for this month to be over. And this is Fish and Frank here in the chair. We got Captain Jimmy Willis in the chair across from me. And Jimmy's been on the water. We're going to talk a little bit about that Back Bay fishing. So, enough of this stuff. Let's get right into the show. Hey, Jimmy.
How's it going?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Couldn't be better if I was twins.
You know?
Yeah. So you've been able to get out on the water. Trying to find days between the wind and the fronts has been a little challenging.
Yes, I've been going in, wind or not. It's in the back, it's not too windy, although the other day there were 2-foot waves back in Turtle Bay.
When you got 2-foot waves in Turtle Bay, that's about 6 in the harbor.
It was, and it was pushing all the water out of the harbor, and the fish were stacking up in the places they were supposed to.
So, what have you been using for bait?
I've been using shrimp under a popping cork.
Now, I'm hearing about, you know, and I know this is a good time. You got to start watching for the white bait, but shrimp has still pretty much been the ticket, hasn't it?
It sure has. The bait is out there. I've been able to get some bait, but I have to kill the bait to get the redfish to bite. And I start off with the redfish in the morning and get out there and get a good start ahead of everybody else with the shrimp.
Yeah. Getting a little bit of shrimp the day before and being able to get to the spot earlier means a lot more fish, a lot better fishing. And now, one of the tricks some of the guys are using is they're using those new rattling jig heads under the popping corks. Have you tried that yet?
No, I have not tried that, but I've been throwing jigs when I have people that want to cast. I've been doing okay with the saltwater assassins, what I've been using.
Yeah, the saltwater assassins real good.
Yeah.
But this is just taking the jig head, putting a live shrimp on it, and getting that little rattle from the chamber to help with the rattle and the pop from the cork. A couple of guys have been playing with that. It's not accepted theory yet.
I got you. No, I have not tried that, but I've been taking a little bit of bait chum and chumming the holes, trying to bring in pinfish and stuff, and I get a little bit of chain reaction going before I cast into them.
Now that's a new one on me. Throwing the powder chum, getting the bait activated, getting the pinfish, trying to go feeding frenzy and all that, and using the bait that's available in the spot to get crazy to make the fish start getting crazy.
Yeah, I can't afford to just chum with the shrimp all day long, so I've been using bait chum, and I'll put a little bit, I'll mix it up and throw it into my bat and toss it out in the hole, and I'll start bringing pinfish and other species in. And
yeah, you're going to get the maharas, the pinfish, all the rest of that stuff that's naturally occurring right there in the area. And by getting them going crazy and starting their feeding frenzy, that's going to wake the fish up.
Yes.
And there is so many shrimp back in those back bays. People don't realize that. And they do respond to chum as well as any other creature on the planet. So you're not only drawing the pinfish, you're drawing the shrimp, the maharas, the pinfish, every little puffer, every little thing. Kind of makes it a little trickier fishing, but using the popping corks would be a definite benefit.
You know, it keeps them from burying up. I find even the shrimp, when the predators come, the shrimp will try to get away. So I'll cut them a little short line where they can't get down in there, and they're sitting ducks, so to speak.
Really good idea, Jim. No wonder you're actually a popular fishing guide.
I'm trying.
You're not exactly dumb.
Nope, I'm trying.
I don't know. I'm not going to really go all the way the other way, but I would say, hey, that one's stupid. That was really good. good advice. That's one thing I love about doing this and talking to you guys, and it's one of the reasons I bought the equipment to help a friend of mine out doing a nationally syndicated show. But we did that and helped him out, and we've been friends for 30 years, so he kind of helped me out, you know, after a while on the cost of the equipment, you know, with different things. And so I had all this equipment. Started doing the radio fishing because it's so hard to type this stuff.
Right.
I mean, sitting here and typing everything you say is tough, double tough. So I wanted this so people could actually hear it come out of your mouth. And this is one of the best examples ever of radio fishing, where you get to hear ideas like this. That is so cool.
It gets me to talk. It's easier to get me to talk than to sit down and write. I'm a fisherman. I'm not a desk person.
All right, what we got to do is Monday or Fridays, you got to start calling me.
Okay.
And we can do this over the phone now.
Okay.
We can do it over the phone, and when you click Jimmy's picture or his fishing logo, it will take you right to his website, and you can hire Jimmy. He does tell me about what you do. I know what you do, but we're going to explain it for them.
Well, I do a lot of the back bay fishing, and as soon as the sharks start to come in, I'll swap over to my larger boat. I'm taking up to 2-3 people in my smaller boat now. A parent and 2 children, or you know, couple.
Right, you got to watch your weight because you are going back in. You're crossing 4-6 inches of water to get back to where there's 18 inches, 2 feet of water where those fish are going to be hanging. But you've got to be able to get across those real skinny areas. And your boat is one of the very few in the harbor that will actually do that. It's not quite a narrow boat, but it's a much more acceptable form.
It's about as close as you can get. I actually measured the other day, and I was sitting in 7 inches of water fishing the potholes out in front. And it helps be able to take off shallow also.
Well, I usually find I can swing around and find a hole to jump out. But, yeah, and 7 is really good for a boat to sit in. I mean, all these boats talk about 4 inches and all that, but I have never, I mean, I've been stuck on just about every kind of boat you can ever imagine, and I always get out, it's always just over my ankles when we're stuck, you
yes.
know, depending on the boat, halfway to my calf, down to, you know, halfway between your calf and your ankle somewhere, but it's usually about 7-8 inches of water you're stuck.
Yes, yes, well, I'm actually floating around in that still, but as long as power head to control motor head, and I can move around pretty well with it.
But that's what I'm saying. That's a very rare boat.
Yes.
And people, you hear the manufacturers talking about this. Oh, yeah, it'll float and this, that, and the next thing. You get in it, and it takes 12 inches of water to float it.
That's before they put gas and people
and motor
and yes.
yeah, everything else on there.
A little thought of where you're putting things to level things out so your boat sits.
Well, that's when I rigged my charter boat. I put seats all the way up in through to the front of the boat. You know, you're out there and everybody wants to stand up and fish for a while, but after you've been out there 3 or 4 hours, it's nice to be able to sit down and relax. So I mounted my seats all the way through the thing of the boat. But the other good thing was when I wanted to get up, I had place for people to sit up front so I could take off flat. And how you load your boat is everything when in the skinny waters we fish.
For sure. For sure.
I mean, I've seen guys who can run really skinny, and they've got all these people in the back of the boat, but as soon as they stop,
you're not floating anymore.
So, what's been a normal day for you? How does your day start?
I've been, like I said, starting off with shrimp, so I pick them up and go straight
so
to
what,
my...
No, let's go. About what time are you getting your customers nowadays?
I'm as close to the lower tide as I can get it right now. Tomorrow morning, for example, I think the tide's going to be low at 3:30 in the morning. Well, I want to be able to see. I'm not...
Right, you're going to be safe.
Yeah, I'm going to be safe, so I'm figuring 7:15,
right.
As close to that low tide as I can. And it's been working well when the water's really low, and then when the water comes in, it's been a little bit harder. I've been actually going to the bushes then.
Well, people don't understand, fishing low tide is so much easier because the fish have to go into the water.
They do.
And when you're fishing on a high tide, they can go anywhere.
They can.
And on low tide, they really, fish don't walk around much. So low tide fishing is actually much simpler if you have the right boat and the right equipment.
I have 34 different holes on my GPS that I check. I know how to stay off of them. I've got a semi half tower anyway, not a real tall one, enough that I can buzz them holes to see if the fish are there. I'll ride around and mark holes with fishing them 8 or 10 different holes, and then I'll swing back to the first place I saw them, give them fish 15-20 minutes to settle down, and I'll shut down, and then I'll slide in on those fish that I see. This time of year, I'm really not fishing. I'm visually fishing these fish. I know they're there.
Yeah, the problem that most people don't understand, I try and tell people, when you go to scout fish, scout your first hole, see the fish, and then go find another spot, and then come back. But the object is behind seeing the fish the first time is knowing where they are, but not only do you need to see the fish, you need to know where you're coming back to, where you're going to put your boat, where you're going to anchor up, so that you can cast to these fish. And you can't come and sit down in that deep water.
No.
So you've got to have the ability to come in quietly through very skinny water, sit in that skinny water, and cast way over into those deep holes. And understanding that, knowing where the fish are, is only half of it.
But what tide, knowing what way the tide's going and the wind also have a...
Because you got to figure out where to put the boat.
Exactly. You don't want to be casting against the wind because you won't get it more than 20 feet away from the boat with your bobber floating towards you. So I always have the wind in my back.
So you got to figure out where those fish are, figure out the proper positioning, everything else. I mean, there's a lot of science behind this, even though we don't call it science. But it is an amazing amount of science. You need to understand which way the water's moving, which way the wind's moving, how you can get your boat in the correct position to get to these fish. Because no matter what happens, if you're too close, they're not going to hit. If you're too far away, you can't reach them.
And if you're not there at the right time, the fish aren't there also. You've got to take into consideration the tide itself at what, you know, low tide or what we need right now.
Now, once the tide, you leave, you're trying to leave in the morning or leave as close to the low tide as possible to be able to get to these holes and sight fish and go along. And so... Now, you've gone through and you've caught your fish, and what's about an average day right now? 10 fish in the morning?
You know, I've been having anywhere from 10 to 30 fish, depending on the different bite. I haven't quite figured out. The other day, I think Friday, I had over 40 fish, and it was time perfect, right? I got back in there before anybody else could even get back in there. We had the place to ourselves for over 2 hours, and
that's a real good number.
Yeah, that's an unusual. I'm not saying that that's a normal number.
I've been out all day long, and I took one of the heads of Rapala out one day. We caught 5 fish all day. The cool part about it was he caught a tarpon, he caught a snook, caught a redfish, caught a trout, and he caught a shark. Those were the only 5 fish. We fished a long day. I mean, we were out like 14, 15 hours. Only 5 fish hooked all day by anybody on the boat. It was all him, and he caught every one of those species. I told him, you'll never see this again.
No, that's awesome, because when you really want it is when it's
really hard
work
to do
for you. It's really hard to do when you're under pressure.
Have you ever
like
noticed
that?
One of the big pressure points to me was people say, oh, well, you got this jerk on the boat. What do you care if a jerk catches fish? But you get the people that you really, really like and you really enjoy being with and you really want to show them a good day, and then the fish don't cooperate.
Yes.
That's what eats me, you, I think, that's what eats us alive.
Oh, sure.
Is because when somebody's a pain or a jerk or whatever, you caught fish, you didn't catch fish. You know, you always feel bad when somebody doesn't catch fish, but it doesn't bother you that much. But when you've got people on the boat that are just fantastic, you really, really want to show them the best day possible, and then the fish don't cooperate. Those were the days that ate me alive.
Yes, that's part of being, that's part of our job, the downside of it when you're...
That is the downside. That is the, to me, that was the worst part about the job. I a little different than most people think.
Well, aggravating when you can sit there and see them, and you go from hole to hole, and you see that the fish are in there, and they're just not playing that day. And I have run into that where I've got 3 to 5 fished where even the trout hardly want to play.
And it's going to happen. My best, as good as I could ever get, was 9 out of 10. I spent 1 year where I had 9 trips were, you know, okay, I caught fish, 9 trips. But then if they kept going and I was doing really, really good, really, really good, well, then I knew they were going to stack up on me. And all of a sudden I was going to spend 2-3 days with never seeing a fish. And I would wake up literally in cold sweats knowing this was coming. And the better things got, the more scared I got.
Now, I'll leave these fishing holes alone for a little bit too. I have so many of the holes that way I want to leave the pressure off some of these fish so I don't run them all out of there. Also, you can't overfish a hole
easily. Overfish a hole, and the hardest part about it is finding captains like you that understand you've got these fish in this spot and they're pretty much locked in on the low tide. But if you sit there and you catch them for 4, 6, 8 hours, it's only gonna last a very short time, then everything's over. If you spend a half an hour in this spot, go on to the next spot for half an hour and on to the next spot, people would say, you know, it literally, you can keep your fishing really good for months at a time, providing you don't abuse the situation.
Yes, I would go in and burn out a hole and catch all my fish in an hour or two of a 6-hour trip, and then spend the rest of the 6 hours riding around bouncing from hole to hole that I've already burned out the days before that.
So my nightmare scenario was finding one of these wannabe captains that would come into, you know, see me fishing, catching fish, and then sit down and spend 6-hour trip and never move. That's my nightmare scenario.
That happens.
My dream scenario was me, you, a few other guys, where we would go in, spend a little time in a spot, catch some really cool fish, go on to the next spot and catch some fish, and the customers have a much better day, get to see a little more territory, it's more interesting, and they catch fish all day, you know. And we might have one hole where we don't go do good, but you know, it's more interesting if you're moving too.
That's what's happening on these lower tides. You have the captains that, well, you pretty much need to know where you're going when you're back there on these tides.
I couldn't do it right now. So I have not spent enough time back there. And if you're not Jimmy, if you're not him, do not expect to run around back there and see stuff. Your boat needs to be a dead slow idle, slow as you can possibly go, preferably on your electric, and look and learn, because there's no way you can do this stuff on plane.
I actually my boat goes 4.8 miles an hour on plane, so I do some of the scouting on plane, a lot of my scouting on
but
plane.
You know that area like the back of your hand. You're in that area. How many times a week do you go back to these areas? 4, 5, 6, 7 times a week?
At least 3 times a week, even if I'm not chartering, just keeping an eye on where the fish are moving around.
But that's what I'm saying. Honey, I don't care.
Oh, I know. I was looking at it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you were waiting for me. The whole thing about it is, if you're not used to the area and you don't know where you're going, going back there in shallow water looking for fish will cause a lot of trouble.
Well, it'll cause a lot of trouble. If you do make it back there and you don't know where you're going, eventually you're going to find something you don't want to find.
Terry and I, my wife, she was waiting for me to order lunch, and I said, I don't care what I get for lunch. I don't, you know, it's right. Food. I don't care. I'm diabetic nowadays, so I can't eat anything good anyway. So, you know, and you give me something that's okay for me to eat. But we went back there, and I missed the slot by 4 feet, the passage. And some of those areas, literally, you've got about 15-20 foot wide place, and you either go through there and make it safely, or you hit the bar.
Yes, exactly.
And then we went flying through the air, came down in about 4 inches of water. Luckily, there was about 12 inches of silt mud.
Yeah.
Not enough to let the boat move, but enough where we could do the African Queen and get it out of there.
See, that silt mud just gets me into more trouble. I just keep sliding. I don't come to a sudden stop. I just kind of glide up into even worse.
Oh, yeah. You get further and further.
Exactly.
We came around the Mayaca Cutoff one day. I'm coming around there, and trying to make sure I'm hitting the outside of the bends, and I cut a corner a little too close. I mean, we stopped the boat. My buddy did a Superman right off the front. It's okay if it rings. Who cares? It's radio fishing. We have telephones, and people cough, and they might even burp every once in a while. You know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's real life. It's not anything else. But, okay, so we start the trip trying to get early as possible, which is the best scenario. So if the low tides are in the very early morning, that's when you want to start. What happens if they're later in the day?
Well, I'll go later in the day. I'm still finding that back in those tides, there's very few boats back there. So it's been really good fishing back in these low tides, and they're just not pressured back there right now.
So the best case scenario is not so much early in the morning, but the lowest tide possible.
The lowest tide
you don't really
possible.
Care what time of day it's going to hit.
No.
And I guess in an ideal world, you'd want to get there right before low tide. Like if you had a real super low at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that would be the...
I'll be sitting there for the tide change if I'm in a spot where I really want. Sometimes I can actually... I'll do that. I'll sit there and I'll watch these fish come in to try and figure out where they're going when the tides are up.
There you go. And now, what do you do after the tide comes up? Because now these fish, once that water comes up, now they got room to meander. So you start off your day, you're trying to hit these cool potholes and get people on a lot of fish. Where do you go after that?
I'm looking for where the tide's moving good and strong and cutting up under the bushes where the fish tend to ambush bait fish.
So this is a guess. I'm just trying to, the best thing would be like between two islands where the water's flowing?
Yeah, between two islands where the water's flowing.
I'm making hand gestures here like an idiot. I'm going like, well, here's an island right between there.
I also like spots where I can see that the water's going up under the bushes and I know that there's fish back.
So let's say there's an opening to a bay or something back over there, or maybe even a cut between other islands that pushing water towards the face of a different island.
Yes, most openings of bays have we call them potholes in front of them, where water where the sand's washed away, and a lot of fish tend to sit on all our points there. Most all points do have the washout.
It's all good. That's kind of what people are kind of interested in hearing, is where do you go, how do you figure this out now? Far as shrimp goes, do you need real big shrimp or medium size?
I go with the selects. I'll get five dozen selects, and then I'll get five dozen just regular shrimp. That way if I get somewhere where I'm catching a lot of smaller trout or something like that, I'll swap over and use the smaller bait.
Now what kind of hooks do you like to use?
I use the Mustads. I like the circle hooks in some cases, with kids especially.
See, I like the wide gap hooks for under bobbers. To me, that's the old fashioned cheap, you know, Kaylee hook, wide gap hook, a number two or a number four with the little shrimp, and as long as it's under a float. They're good on their own, but I think under a float, to me, it's the ultimate hook. You know, they're cheap and they work great, but not everybody follows that.
Well, I've been using them for so long, and they work real. They've been working for me.
Yeah.
If it's not broke,
the old Mustad 37-140.
Exactly.
And that's you know, the 37-140 and 37-141. To me, they're the best hooks ever invented for under popping corks.
That's what I use.
And they always hook in the corner of the mouth. They do everything people thought circle hooks would do, but you can get them out of the fish.
Yes.
You can actually remove that hook. It doesn't take an act of Congress. You don't have to bend the hook straight and try and rebend
it. Without hurting them, yes.
And because circle hooks tear fish up, to me, they're really hard on the fish. You know, they're good for catching because they don't really gut hook much, but when they do, that fish is over. And because if they get caught in a gill or anything like that, the circle hook's a nightmare. You cannot get it out. But with the Kaylee hook, it's always in the corner of the mouth. They're just too cool.
Yeah.
And they're cheap.
Yep, they're not expensive. And then, like I said, if it works, don't fix it.
Sorry, I'll get this stuff out of your way, Jimmy. I keep forgetting, you know, not everybody's a mess like I am. I'm working on getting all e-cigarettes back here. So,
I know.
But I am a mess, but this is the way I am. I have very few vices left. I just happen to have coffee and nicotine. Caffeine and nicotine are the two I'm still... I mean, I wish I could be as healthy as you guys. Probably not going to happen.
Well, we'll see about that. It seems to be no method to the madness of that, that's for sure.
But, so everything else is going pretty good?
Yeah, everything's going good.
Now, how do people get a hold of you for a charter?
Well, they can go to MrTarpon.com.
Which they can do by clicking the picture right next to this show. And you got a phone number?
Yes, I do. It's area code 941-628-4823.
941-628-4823.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, when you hear Jimmy on the show, he's all kind of quiet and laid back and everything, but this guy's really into fishing. And you get out on the water with him, and it's like the alter ego comes out. He's still quiet, but he's like, he's into it.
Running and chumming.
Yeah, I mean, how many years? We've known each other almost 30 years now, I guess.
Yes,
about 30 years.
Yeah, at least 30 years.
And I can tell you, I've known Jimmy before he had his license, since he's had his license, and you won't fish with a nicer guy. Jimmy catches a lot of fish, so you get 2 points there. You know, I always tell people, call the captains and talk to them for 5 minutes on the phone. Because if you don't like the guy, why are you going to spend 6 hours on a boat with him?
That makes sense, for sure.
You know, and I can't imagine somebody not getting along with you. You're so pleasant. I mean, you're just...
I get along with most.
Yeah, you're just, you know, as easygoing as anybody I've ever known. I mean, how else could you be friends with me for 30 years?
That hasn't been hard.
But anyway, anything else you'd like to talk about? I mean, you got all the shark stuff coming up. We're going to do some shark shows with you because you are ultimate adventure shark guy, you know.
I'm actually starting to catch them now. I've done a few days where I've been out there. I had a client call me to go shark fishing, and I mentioned that I hadn't been in a while, and he informed me that they were biting. So
I've heard that. Now I'm wondering what's going to happen after this last week of cooler weather, if that's going to push them back south or if they're going to hang out. When's the last time you did a shark trip?
Last week, and we got a lemon shark somewhere around 7 foot.
Yeah,
it was pretty impressive. I was surprised.
Very impressive.
It jumped straight out of the water. The whole fish came out of the
really?
Water.
Really?
It did.
How many times have you ever seen a lemon come up out of the water?
I was really surprised when I saw it. I didn't know. I knew it couldn't be because of the length. I knew it wasn't a spinner or...
Right.
I wasn't sure what was going on.
I've never seen that.
That's the first time I've seen it, but it came up and jumped straight up and spin and...
Holy cow!
That was pretty cool.
No, really cool. I've from my chartering days and my just going out playing days, I've caught a lot of sharks. I've never had a lemon come out of the water.
I set up on Johnson Shoal out there the other day, and I've never had this happen before, but I had 100 pelicans come in and surround my boat, and they were diving 6 feet in the water and getting half a mullet that I had on. I had to leave.
Really?
Yeah. The guy goes, I've never seen nothing like this. I'm like, I haven't seen anything like it either.
I've never seen that.
All around, just surrounded the boat, they were flying, high diving, and just going down and coming up with my bait. They run me off.
I've never seen that before. These are brown pelicans?
The brown ones. It was not the white ones. It was ours.
I can honestly tell you, so many people feed them that I think they're just getting in that habit. And these are all grown up since Hurricane Charlie.
Yeah.
And before Charlie, now, I'd get them that... I had one literally flew into my boat and rode with me all day. He wouldn't leave the boat. At the end of the day, when the customers got off the boat, I had to pick him up and throw him off the boat.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just... And I mean, we're going 30-some miles an hour. He's just standing there in the deck. Okay, this is cool.
Yeah, they weren't having a problem. They were floating all around the boat, dropping on the boat, everything. That's what ran me off. They were bombing us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, nature's getting a little bit weird. The only thing, it's got to be people feeding them.
It must be, because I've never really had it quite like that.
I've never even heard of that before.
Well,
wow.
Last week.
So you had a lemon shark come all the way out of the water, absolutely unheard of. Now, this is just a slight thing. Did you see anything else in the water?
As far,
you've got eyes like an eagle. I mean, if there was something chasing him, if he got scared.
Yeah, no, it was too far out.
Too far out?
Yeah, he started running drag pretty good and come straight up out of the water. By the time he ran, started running drag, and when I looked is when he come up, and that, like I said, I knew it wasn't a spinner or a black tip because of the length of it, and I don't know what was going on with it.
The only thing I could think of is like maybe a hammerhead chasing him or something, but
I
can't even imagine a hammerhead big enough to chase a 7 foot lemon out, because nothing else could chase a 7 foot lemon shark.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
I mean, I don't think there's anything else big enough out there to do it. And I haven't heard of any of them in the area. I heard of a 7-foot hammerhead a couple weeks ago, but it was pretty warm then. I can't imagine it's...
Yeah.
So, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. Yeah. There wasn't a lot. I was a little disappointed. I mean, it was a slow day as far as a shark fishing trip would go, but...
But better than I would have ever expected for January.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's not a lot of shark things going on right now, but to have that fish hit in January, I'm sorry, Jimmy, that's a great shark trip. For January, that is phenomenal.
Just a little low on the action for someone, that's all. You know.
Yeah, but, you know, to catch a 7 foot shark in January in this part of Florida, that's a 1 in 1,000 shot.
I'll agree with that.
Or one in 10,000 shot. We keep trying to tell people, wait for your shark stuff till, you know, late March, April, May, and you'll have the Florida shark days.
Because, sure.
I mean, I don't think it's anything for you. I would say an average shark trip be 4 to 6 good sharks.
At least. On a good day, until we're done, they just keep on biting. And when we're saying good sharks, we're talking 4 to 8 foot bull sharks, real common.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can have some amazing shark days. It is Florida, and we do have those kind of shark days. But for you to catch a 7 foot and then have it come out of the water, I'm sorry, I'm writing that. If I was on that charter, I'd be ecstatic. I mean, I would be just, I'd be doing pinwheels or cartwheels or whatever they call it, you know? That's a heck of a day, Jimmy. Anything else you want to talk about today?
Oh, no, I think we covered it today.
Right. I know, I need to learn how to shut up. I get that. But anyway, click Jimmy's picture right next to the thing in the show here, and you'll be able to take you right to his website. And tell me your phone number one more time.
That's area code 941-628-4823.
See, you're kind of doing that in time with the music. That was good. 628.
Get a little rhythm going.
I like that, Jimmy. All right, well, this is Fish and Frank in the chair. And, of course, it's Radio Fish, and that's what it said when you clicked it. And Captain Jimmy Wills on the chair across from me. And we thank you guys so much for listening. Catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.